myself, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
After all of this, and Kerry may get the ball back. They do. Tomas O'Shea has it. Sensational All-Ireland final. Inside to Darragh O'Shea. This time, various things are happening off the ball. Let's continue with watching what's happening. Mike Frank Russell into space. Nobody there for him. Colin Cooper was taken out of the action there. As I saw it, the referee's whistle sounds. It's all over. And Tyrone have won the All-Ireland. Absolutely sensational performance by Tyrone. They've won by 3 points. They had so many heroes. And after 10 matches in the 2005 Championship, they have come and they have beaten the champions of last year.
There's only one place to start, Conan, with this one. This was an absolutely brilliant game. Beautiful sunshine. All-Ireland final is the goal just before halftime, because this really gave Tyrone the gap that they deserved. There's no point in saying anything else, and that they never lost. It was a long ball by William Kirby, and we're going to get to this in part two about Kerry's persistence on just giving aimless ball into a two-man full forward line. But it was a Kirby long ball just after a Darragh O'Shea equally terrible ball in, and it was won by Tyrone, and they worked the ball up to the field, and it got to Philip Jordan, who wouldn't be known for giving balls like this, but saw Owen Mulligan on the edge of the square, and an absolutely brilliant, well, very, very high ball. But Muggsy's pretty decent in the air when he's facing a ball like that. He's strong and he catches it. Paul Galvin's marking Muggsy. Yep. How did that happen? Then you look off the screen slightly and Canavan has read this and is peeling off, and Seamus Minehan's asleep and has completely left Peter Canavan away from him. He gets the slip pass and he just clips the outside of the ball. I'm not sure how Martin Carney described it, but it was, I don't know.
Is it a pebble?
I don't know what he called it. Yeah. He actually called, what did he call? He called the Gooch and McManaman the Wasp and the Imp.
Yeah.
that's the way he used to do it. But that was it. An unbelievable goal. And then it was followed up by a Brian McGuigan pint. And now Tyrone are four up. And it probably was no less than they deserved.
And like the big difference, you're talking about Kirby and O'Shea playing it in. Philip Jordan, it was a pass from the wing.
Well, he saw it.
Yeah, it was one on one inside. And yeah, as you said, it was Galvin. And like, I'm sure you've been there in that situation before, where suddenly you've ended up marking a real danger man.
That's what you get for dropping back.
Yeah, and you're like, oh Christ, I hope nobody notices this. Like, and usually you get away with it, but you're thinking, if somebody plays this in, I am in big trouble here.
Yeah.
And that's what happens.
It's very good thinking from Jordan to do it, because it's not, he's a runner. You know, that wasn't really his game to be doing stuff like that. So it was incredible for him to compute this under that pressure and say, Jesus, here, look, actually, I might try launch one in there.
Yeah.
So no, under McGuinness, Donegal would launch the odd long one like that, you know, because obviously of retreating players and stuff like that. Mickey Hart said a few things after the match. He says, people talk about the way football's going. That was some game of football out there, or that was some football out there. And like, I was just thinking back to 2005, I watched that game and it was absolutely brilliant. And the semi-final against Armagh was absolutely brilliant. Yeah. And Kerry hammered Cork in the semi-final. Dublin-Tyrone was in. Now, is this Mickey Hart having a chip on his shoulder, which we know he's capable of? But surely no one was giving out about football back in 2005, the way it's going. What was wrong with it?
I was just going to say to you, this top of the show, because you were saying, like, what a brilliant game. And I was like, and you've been telling me football's bad. Like, here we go, look at it. But, yeah, it was unreal. Like, remember the Ulster final at Crow Park, the first game?
Yeah.
That was a real classic as well. Like, yeah, I went to replay, which was a bit more boring, but like, that was an amazing summer for football. And like, yeah, Mickey Hart's right, will he? The naysayers are wrong.
I think it was the 2003 puke football that Pat Spillane labelled it, but there was nothing puke about this. And like, Tyrone's, obviously their work rate was unparalleled back then, and they made it so difficult for other teams. Their forwards were just so good at tackling and were so willing to work that the other team just couldn't breathe sufficiently to start playing football. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
And they used like their assets. They did it, like, yes, they worked hard, they got around people, they were really intense, but They scored 116 in that final, and like 115 was from the six starting forwards. Like all six of them scored, and like Philip Jordan scored a screamer at the very end.
At the end,
well.
Yeah.
But like it was, they were using their forwards to do the damage.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. Mickey Hart also said after the game, he says, when Cormac McAnallan was made captain of our team, he said he didn't want to leave it with just one All-Ireland, and he hasn't. And then he broke down crying, which is an incredible moment. Marty Morrissey back then was a sideline reporter.
Yeah.
We all start out on the sideline, Marty. Now look where he is. So yeah, interestingly enough, so Canavan scores that unbelievable goal just before half time, and then he doesn't come out in the second half, which a massive, massive call. He's 34. He's not that old. Now, like, I mean, now another part of me thinks they had to make a change in midfield because Tyrone were getting eaten in midfield, and they got on Collie Holmes and they took Canavan off. Enda McGinley went into the corner, and then Canavan comes back on after 54 minutes, scores one of the best points you'll ever see in Croke Park on the 58th minute, and then wins a free, one of the softest frees you'll ever see in Croke Park on the 61st minute, where he picked the clean up off the ground and then fell over and got a free for it. But like, I mean, that's, you don't see a lot of the football in the modern game now is if you're 34, you're getting the last 20 minutes. But what's wrong with starting the game and setting the tone? Maybe there's a science to say that this is actually silly, although the sin bin is making players go off and rest and come back on. But like, I mean, what's wrong with starting 20 minutes and finishing 20 minutes? Or, you know, starting a half an hour, finishing 15 minutes?
Yeah, because like, would you rather him play 15 minutes and come off at the time where it's all heating up?
When you need him, yeah.
Or have him fresh when you need him. And that's it. Like, he got the point straight after the goal, Tomás O'Shea rattled the net, and Kerry's backs were up. They were all buzzing. And then Peter Canavan curled this one over from about, what, 9 yards out at that sort of angle.
Beautiful, yeah.
Unbelievable. And nobody else, I'm sure actually that's their own forward line, because nobody else could do that, but like, that was real inspirational. And if they had just brought him off after 50 minutes because his legs had given way, sure, what's good's that? Then you have Enda McGinley up there, who's a good player but a different player.
Yeah, and well, Enda wasn't really in it in the second half, to be fair. There was a weird situation towards the end where Mike Frank Russell had a free on the 71st minute and there was 3 points in it, and I don't know, he's on the 21-metre line and it looks to me like he's lobbing it into the square, and there's four Kerry men and four Tyrone men and no Kerry men, unless the Kerry players misread what Mike Frank wanted, or unless Mike Frank completely mishit this free and didn't lob it into the square, went for a point or something. It was a very strange situation. Tyrone then catch that ball, burst out, the crowd go mad, and I was like, God, Kerry, you've really shot yourselves. Look, to be honest, Kerry didn't really look like they were going to be getting a goal at that point, but still, I just thought it was a bit of a weird one. Then 4 minutes was called on the commentary of extra time, and the referee played three. Now again, that minute wouldn't have made anything, or else they could have got it wrong. Didn't look like Kerry were getting back into that game.
Maybe there was a sub in injury time and then we didn't add it on, and then it should be a shot clock in injury time. But yeah, like the Mike Frank Russell thing, he's actually looking for a ball inside, I think, and then when the camera pans away and it looks like he's shooting, but it drops so far short. I don't think he didn't mean to do that. But then, as you said, there's all these Tyrone players around. But then Kerry had kicked about 20 balls like that into the area anyway and didn't really care who was around. So
yeah,
I think he was just dropping it in, see what would happen.
Just dropping it in, yeah. And there was no communication because the other lads were just sitting there, standing there waiting for him to tap it over the bar. Maybe that was it. But come here, we want to leave it there because Brian McGuigan has joined us on the line now for a chat about this match. Brian, how's it going?
All good, boys. All good.
And no, I had no prompts from you to start with the 2005 All-Ireland where you beat a brilliant Kerry team and you scored 3 points from play.
Yeah, that didn't happen too much in my throne career, really. But look, it was one of those days where everything went right for me. Don't forget, I started that year. I had went to Australia. I think it was that start of January that year, and my intentions were to go for a year, because I just felt I needed a break at that time. It was just after the passing of Cormac McAnallan the year before. I just said, look, I want to go and do things that I said I would do. And obviously you miss the football, but the intentions were in January to go away for the full year. Me and my future wife went at that time, and I did keep in contact with Mickey over the January, February, March period, and I kept myself good enough, Mick, that I could come back and play. And it was decided then I would come back after the fourth round against Down down that year. I missed that game, but then I come back the following week. And don't get me wrong, yes, it took me a while to get back in the swing of things. You think you're okay fitness wise and your touch and all, but you do need those games at that level, especially come back in to play at county level. It's a much higher standard than club football. But I felt I was in good enough shape, but it did take me a few matches to get back. But when I come back, it definitely, the break had done me a world of good, and I just felt so good. And that period leading up to the All-Ireland final of 05, I probably was playing the best football in my career, and I felt it in every game that I could get the better of my opponent. And you just felt so good. But in that final, you know, like I was playing the position that it was a playmaker, but don't forget, I was playing with maybe four of the best players, the best forwards that we ever had, with Peter, Owen Mulligan, Stephen O'Neill, Brian Doher. Like, so to be a playmaker in that team, it was so easy because they were making the right moves for me, and it was just a matter of me finding them because they were taking up good positions. But we were coming up against a really, really good Kerry team who a lot of those players were in their prime too, so we had to be on top of our game that day too.
Yeah, exactly. You might not remember, but I played against you in Australia. I wouldn't say you were in great shape out there. I would have said average shape now at best.
Well, look, a couple of months before I came home, I realised I had a knuckle down at the earlier part of that holiday. Now I definitely enjoyed myself, but the most important thing was at that time, as I say, especially after the Cormac, the whole thing about Cormac was getting a clean break from it, and I come back probably looking forward to football more than the people that were playing back at home in his own team. So
yeah,
like I was really ready for it by the time the summer come.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, I watched the game back this morning, and outside of the 15 minutes, it was a convincing win for Tyrone, if we're being blunt about it.
Yeah, well, I think it was, who got the goal? Was it Tomás O'Shea got the goal?
In the second half, yeah, to got it back to
exactly.
One.
That probably was kept them in it at that time, but we had missed a few chances before that to really put them out of sight. Myself personally, I know if you you know, watching it back, the first 5 minutes, 5-10 minutes, I had a real bad first 5 or 10 minutes. But the game, I finished up planning, the first 3 touches I got, the first one, the ball came into me and Mark O'Shea, and I think he beat me to the ball, come out with it. The second one,
you were through on goal in the first minute and you were dispossessed.
Yeah,
wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes. The first touch I got, I was through. I took a solo, lost control of it, and the ball came out. The second one, Marco Shea, me and him went for the ball. He won it. And the third one, I think it was through and goal, went for a goal and put it wide, where I probably should have squared the ball across to Owen Mulligan, who was in a better position. And that was my first 5 or 10 minutes. Like, but then after, everything just seemed to click in the gear. No matter what you've done, it seemed to go right. So you get days like that, but I think to do it on Northern Ireland final made it extra special, because like, I think I started off with Mark O'Shea and maybe finishing Tomás O'Shea that day, two unreal footballers. Like, so.
Well, that was it.
But I think actually getting into that game, the fact that we were playing, our forward line consisted of Doher, Mulligan, Cannon, Stephen O'Neill. I don't know what Kerry's thinking we're behind, but they maybe focused on those four, and me and Ryan Mallon came in kind of under the radar that day. And if you mind, Ryan Mallon had a really, really good game that day too.
Yeah, you were on the two O'Shea's. Mark O'Shea man marked you, but like Mark O'Shea would have been young back in those days. He was on you, and then when Doher started cleaning out Minehan, he went over on Doher, and I think that's when you started coming into the game a bit more, was it?
That's what I mean. They maybe took their eye off me a wee bit, and I enjoyed the freedom of it. Where, you know, if you look at today's game, where I was playing that day, you kind of, their forwards kind of hold their positions right across that 45-yard line. Like, there was a lot of space for me to work in, and that was the time where the centre half backs were kind of holding the positions. And I also mind that year where I was the few times with Mark Kieran McGeaney too, and he really was a man that held the position and kind of forgot about the boy he was marking, which left me loads of space to work in. And I was just getting, every time any of our defence or midfield get the ball, I seemed to be free, and because my man wasn't marking me, he was holding the centre. And I just love space, which is probably why I wouldn't like to play the day's game, especially the way I would have played it. It mightn't suit me.
But that day,
just there seemed to be a lot of space for me to walk in.
It did, yeah. And you got a brilliant point on 25 minutes. I was reminded of it on Twitter there. Someone was telling me it's on the 25th minute, both Moynihan and Galvin were on you, and it was a really tight angle. And then you got a good one just at the very end of the half. And then another one Muggsy threw back out to you in the second half. But I suppose that point, especially when you're saying that after the shaky start, that point on the 25th minute, you were starting to get your hands on a bit of ball at that stage, and that point then probably in your head, you're like, now I'm playing well.
Yeah, well, the confidence was up, and even the first point I got, kind of threw the dummy, and the two boys, usually the thing that one man would follow you and all boys would stand you up more, but those two boys went the way I turned, and it definitely were a free shot. Now, luckily, the ball could have went wide, but it was really an acute angle. But lucky enough, went over. But then the second one, just before the half, the momentum was completely with us.
Yeah.
And we had just got the goal. And I think it maybe put us two or three points up at that stage. And my point maybe was the last play of the half. But it was just after the goal, and we had won the ball. The ball was played in to Sean. Sean gave it back out to me. And it's 45 yards out. You just took a pot shot because, as I say, your confidence is up, the momentum was with you. And then, lucky enough, I went over the bar. And me coming in at half time thinking, look, I've put ourselves in a good position here. And I come in, Peter Cannon was standing eating ahead of me because he said he was standing in the zone free. Nobody was marking him.
Right.
So that's the bollocks, and I got it half time from him because he was standing. I didn't pass the ball to him.
And did you know he wasn't going to come out no matter what happened in the first half? He wasn't coming out in the second half. Was that decided before? Because you were losing midfield as well. So that maybe a change was needed there as well.
Yeah, no, we never would have knew anything they got was happening. Mickey never, there's even times where somebody wasn't starting, and Mickey wouldn't tell you till maybe the we were in the circle before we were run out in the positions, and Mickey telling you that this is the change, he's not starting, such and such isn't starting. He wasn't great at doing that, but maybe he wanted to hold you back. Like, for us to go out in a match or come out at half time and no one having time to think about Peter not being there, you know, it maybe in your mindset it wouldn't be good for the mindset. Even, I mean, the 2003 All-Ireland Final before it, when we knew Peter was struggling, because we had seen him and we had seen how he was struggling and training the whole week leading up to it. And rightly so, Mickey wanted to protect us from maybe thinking that Peter wasn't playing and he wanted to play him that day. But if we were coming in to play the final that day and Mickey was to tell us that Peter Cannon wasn't playing, psychologically in our heads,
it
would play, especially we were so young at that time. And Peter would be forced to say it, that he didn't get many touches that day, but he still was making our Armagh team think we'll have to mark him. But whereas you could have probably left Peter Kennan with no semi-final standing in the zone, and he would have no influence on the game. But the fact he was in the field of play was massive for us.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. It was. I thought, obviously, we all knew in 2003 it was because of an ankle injury that they did it. But like, he's after scoring a goal, one of the best goals ever scored in Croke Park, and he's lively in the first half. Like, I mean, he's playing maybe out in front of the two, and himself and Stephen O'Neill are alternating. One's playing on, you know, around the D. Then you're out a little bit further from them. It wasn't like he wasn't playing well in the first half. It was a huge call for Mickey not to let him go back out at the start of the second half.
Yeah, but you can actually see how shrewd he was in that when things weren't going well for us, and not that they weren't going well, we were playing well, we just weren't converting our chances. And the fact that Peter had come off when the game was starting to maybe not so much slip away from us, but Kerry were walking themselves back in the game. It was a perfect scenario for Mickey that he had took him off. Then we could see Peter come back on again, give us a lift. And what does he do? The first touch that he gets, puts it over the bar.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, brilliant. So whether that's luck or whether that's just Mickey being shrewd, it definitely worked for us. But look, these calls can work for you or the camp. Because look, even go back to the OC final, if we hadn't been beat that day, the questions would have been asked of Mickey, why were you playing a man who was only 50% fit? But the fact that you win, it camouflages over all those scores.
Oh, it covers everything, yeah. There's no doubt. So that was your 10th game, the hardest All-Ireland ever won, which was absolutely incredible. You were probably more battle-hardened than Kerry, really, as well, coming into the final. They had hammered Cork in a semi-final. Like, Jesus Christ, that year, 2005. It's an incredible, incredible journey that you went on.
Yeah, it was. And look, as I said before, even during the match, it's all about momentum. Like, we just felt invincible at that time. And I think the fact that maybe Kerry was sitting back, we had played 10 games, whereas Kerry was sitting back and they were playing training matches or whatever, like, nothing compares to match day. So, like, we knew ourselves, our near enough, our weekly routine was to play the match. And then we always would have stopped in the Kirkdale on the way home, get a recovery session done in the pool. Even leading up to maybe Tuesday night, it was all recovery. And then it was training. And then the Thursday night, you were back meeting again. And it was really just going through a run-through of the game. And there was no real hard training sessions. And you just loved that there, playing friendly football. You loved it playing every week. And maybe the fact that Kerry was sitting back and they hadn't, they hadn't played as many matches, maybe they didn't even know their best team at that time. Because, I mean, was it Darren Sullivan maybe come on that day and caused us a bit of a ball at that time? You know, he had to get a run of, because he was young, he had to get a run of games early on, more games to prove himself. He maybe could have started. So, yes, maybe they didn't have their best team on.
I thought it was Gaff. Poor Chris Lawn caught a great ball when he came on, and he was doing grand. You know what the age he would have been at, and then all of a sudden he found himself and Darren running around after Darren O'Sullivan.
I know it wasn't easy, like he Darren Sullivan come on, he caused us major problems over in the far side, like. But as I say, we probably should have been more ahead. Looking back on the game now, we probably should have been more ahead than we were that day. But it's probably a credit to Kerry that they're able to stay in the game.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, go on.
No, like, even the fact that, I don't know whether I used him much, like, but Kieran Donoghue was there at that time, but he wasn't used as much in 05. I don't think he's maybe used at all in 05, which maybe could have caused us problems that day, like, but...
But Kerry, geez, I don't know, Brian. Like, I mean, ye seem to have a much better style. Ye were very comfortable running the ball through your hands with support play, and then you'd get it up as far as you, and then a nice ball would go in. Whereas I was surprised at how Kerry were kind of just lumping it into O'Kaneda and Gooch, almost hoping rather than actually working it through the half forward line.
Yeah, well look, we know that they're good players, but sometimes that time maybe Kerry were just relying on their talent alone to maybe get them over the line, and maybe did work in previous years. Like, we talk about 2004, where we talk about maybe they won a handy enough All Ireland, where just it was talent alone was getting them over the line. But the one thing that we prided ourselves on was hard work and tackling, and yes, they come across at 0-3, but maybe winning an 0-4, they felt that they were back where they should be, and they weren't really prepared for us in 05. You definitely could see a change in them in 08. Yes, we overcome them in 08, but, you know, there was a lot of luck involved in that too. You take past and McConnell save in the final that time. You know, the Kerry, we have no doubt the Kerry had better players than us in 08, but it just was our collective unit was much greater than theirs whenever it come to the championship game. And I think that after that, you know, Kerry maybe realised that they had to change the game and they probably did.
I think you changed Gaelic games in general, I think, probably in 03 with the work rate of your forwards. It hadn't really been seen at that level of intensity before. And even Kilkenny and Hurling copied it, and Brian Cody's on record for saying that. And even it was noticeable even in 05, while Kerry were trying to work hard, they just weren't, they weren't getting too... When you got a hand on, there was two lads straight away to help you out, where, you know, Kerry weren't really doing that.
Yeah, they weren't on... But the thing about it is, you know, in 03 and even 05 and even the clip of 03, yes, there's a lot of our players around. There was a lot of our players around that wee clip, but maybe around 3 or 4 Kerry players. But the one thing about it is, if there's a lot of our players around that, then 3 or 4 players, they had to be all Kerry players who are free on out the field.
Yeah.
So, like,
well, it's risky, yeah.
It's risky because they had got the ball out at all. Like, we were completely exposed at the back. But when you had the likes of Kevin Hughes and Brian Duher and Andy McGinley, who worked so hard around the middle, it leaves it much easier for our defence to get on top of their opponents. Like, me and Owen Mulligan will have no problems in saying we weren't really hard-working forwards, but because we had so many men around us who were doing active work, maybe double the work to cover us, then it made it easier for us. Like, but as I say, like, playing today's game where you can have to move up and down the field, I don't know how it would suit the likes of me and old Mulligan. Like, but.
Well, probably not. Come here, I don't want to finish on a bad note, but you got no All-Star that year. Didn't Canavan rub you on your All-Star after just a couple of games?
Oh, I always give him a jab at that there. But look, I think when I was in Australia at the start of the year, the one thing I wanted to come home for was an All-Ireland medal, and the fact that I got it, and I didn't come home for an All-Star. Yeah, so don't get me wrong, I think if I hadn't got an All-Star in O3, it probably would have made it more hurtful not getting one in O5. But the fact, I do believe the fact that I went straight back to Australia after the All-Ireland final, I went back to finish off in the year for 4 or 5 months. And the fact that I maybe wasn't at the All-Star banquet and knew I wasn't going to be there, it maybe made it a bit easier for them to not give it to me. But
I get you.
Look, I think if I hadn't got 1-0-3, I probably would have been a bit more angry. But, you know, at the end of the day, we got it all learned. One thing has come back for us.
Yeah, so. That's the most important thing.
I don't mind giving to Peter.
What does Peter say when you're digging at him about that?
No, I just laughed. He just laughed. Like, I think he did tell me when he got it that he was a bit embarrassed getting in my position. Like, but it seemed a bit strange now that he never played the position and he got it. But I think he's a great player to play with. There's no animosity with me. And
no.
Joe Bradley always brings it up to me. He said, I wanted to give you man of the match in all our final. I pleaded for him to give it to you and didn't give it to you.
Who got it?
Owen Mulligan got that day.
Muggsy got it, right. Okay, he's down on my list Muggsy here anyway, so that's not too bad.
He played well too, up there, he played very well.
No, Muggsy played very well. Muggsy came alive in the Dublin game, so that's well documented as well. Brian, I won't take any more of your time. Thanks very much for taking the call.
All right, no problem. Thanks, boys, for chatting.
All right, great stuff from Brian there. Up next, we'll have a look at the match.
He goes, if you boys are doing God's work, you can do whatever you want in the field. My kind of, for me, that was a free pass.
So when you say Mickey takes it to another level, what will he be doing this week?
An extra tackle of the rosary. I know you're my every tomorrow.
And I know that you'll always. You know, Tyrone or Quare Hawks in the final, and a hawk is a Quare bird. We've got the
So Tyrone 116, Kerry 210. Like, to just sum it up, like I was kind of talking to Brian there in part one, Kerry the better team for 15 minutes, Tyrone the better team for the rest of the game, pretty much. You'd say, in fairness, Kerry started well. And sometimes you think, how did Kerry go out of it and how did Tyrone seem to get scores easier and work the ball up? It's like Tyrone were just way more comfortable running it through the hands and probably got up the field easier than Kerry running it through the hands. When Kerry tries to run it through the hands, they got bottled up a lot of the time. A lot of the time they panicked and kicked it in long from way too far back. Tyrone didn't do that at all. Tyrone were happy to run it through the hands, support play, get it to the half-forward line to McGuigan or whoever, and then give a nice little ball in to the three lads inside, you know, who were all alternating. Tyrone had a much kind of better sense of what their system was, I think.
Yeah, and there was a lot of, I think, casualness in Kerry. Yeah, like they either had stopped and they were getting nailed, or they'd stopped and they were kicking it too early, like too early and too long. And
way too early and too long. Into two fellas, Gooch and Dara Kaneda, who weren't going to win it. Like, no. Gooch is good in the air, But he's good with a nice floating ball. He's not, or a diagonal ball. Like, these were coming straight down his throat.
Raining down on top of
him. Raining down.
And like, you look at his three scores that he got from play. Like, the first one was Sullivan, played it down the line, and it was an unbelievable point. Just like, on the wing, just curves it over. He can do that if you give him the ball. And then I think Galvin played him a long one, and they sort of let McMenamin go out for it, and he got it in behind.
There's a bit of an element of luck there. Galvin was just kind of getting it in there. Galvin gave him a great ball for his first point of the second half, where he gave him a little diagonal one like that. That's the type of ball Gooch wanted. He didn't get it all day.
So I don't understand why he wasn't more annoyed. Like, he was giving out to Dara O'Shea at one stage because Dara O'Shea hit it too long over the end line, but every single ball that was going in, why were they not just bouncing in front of him and then letting him?
Because they were going from too far back, and Conor Gormley was covering, so they were probably trying to get it over the cover player too. Whereas what Kerry were doing well at the start of the game, in the first 50 minutes, is they were working it through Owen Brosnan, who was breaking out around the half forward line, and Declan O'Sullivan, and they were getting on ball through their half forward line. Do you get me?
Yeah.
Then they just started completely avoiding the half forward line, and it has to go straight from then from midfield into the two into the two lads, and then it's just easily broken down. Conor Gormley's getting it, or it's just a backs ball, you know, to begin with. So, Kerry just didn't. They didn't have any presence on the half forward line, and maybe they were just getting sucked into the Tyrone game of, you know, trying to work too hard and their half forward line working too hard. Kerry needed a half forward line to go through. On the other hand, you see Tyrone's half forward line working hard, but they didn't desperately kick it long. They worked it through the extra men they had back and through the hands, support play, and out or out, you know, past midfield. And, you know, McGuigan might have held his position and he's getting on it now. It's going in nice. They just had a much better way of playing Tyrone.
Phases of play, and now it's time to kick the ball into your full forwards. And like, that's actually a good point with the sweepers. And I think that probably was in Kerry's heads that they were spooked with Tyrone's numbers. So they were trying to get it in behind, and even
it had
Cooper,
to be a tactic, because there were a lot of long hopeful balls, which that's just silly football, really.
It was too many, like, and even Cooper was in behind. So how many times did you see McMenamin just coming out and catching the ball in his chest because the ball's coming from Tomas O'Shea or Kirby or Dara O'Shea, and they're just like launching them from way down, and Cooper's in behind at that stage, so he doesn't have a chance to run out in front or anything.
Yeah,
it made it very easy either way. If a ball was coming in high or if it was dropping short, the Tyrone boys were in front.
That's the thing. And like, I mean, Moynihan was playing the same similar role to Gormley on the other side, but he was being completely bypassed.
Yeah.
Do you know? Because Tyrone weren't kicking it from far enough back. He wasn't. They were kicking no hopeful balls that he was just going to turn around and get a break from, like Gormley was. Moynihan actually had a terrible first half. He started off on Doer, and Doer was causing him all sorts of problems because he wasn't following him. And I think he just have to follow Doer. But you see, Doer is smart. Doer was running back and picking up Declan O'Sullivan, allowing Conor Gormley. Now, O'Sullivan did start well, but allowing Conor Gormley to, you know, drop back without any worry about who he has to mark. Whereas you didn't really see that with Doer. Moynihan fouled Doer twice. He got a yellow card for the second foul, which was a big enough foul. And then Mark O'Shea was put on Doer.
Yeah.
They had to change the man. And then Moynihan was caught for over carrying. You know, he was indecisive, and he's their spiritual leader. And he just was at sixes and sevens really in the first half.
The overcarrying, I actually thought, was he trying to address these awful balls that were going in? So he was looking up, seeing the same options and thinking, right, I'm not kicking it. But then suddenly, as soon as you're indecisive against their own, you're hammered, like their boys are around you.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many times that happened to Kerry boys, but they didn't learn from it.
This was probably a lot of these tactics. None of that looks new now, obviously, we're in 2020.
Yeah.
But in 2005, this was new. That level of work rate and that swarming the middle of the field and getting hands in and not having a second to breathe, you know, because usually a half back would have a bit of time to solo and hop and, you know, pick out a nice pass. And forwards just didn't work that hard. And Tyrone just brought this to a whole new level. Like, I've played against them at that time . Just no. You do things you don't want to do because you just know that you can't hold on to that ball for that long.
Yeah.
So you're actually forcing a pass that in your head you're like, that's not really on, but what do I want? To get it in and hope that he wins it in there, or for me to get bottled up? They force you into doing things.
Were you full forward against them, or half forward?
Wing forward, yeah.
Right.
Wing forward.
Even worse, so you're following Philip Jordan?
It's a level of... Now, Philip Jordan man-marked me that day, in fairness. He didn't go forward that much.
Right.
He just stayed on me. But it's just that level of intensity from them where, you're just in a gate, you're in it. It's tough going, you know. It's
definitely off.
You can't really switch off at all. You can't get anything. There's nothing handy.
Yeah, did you see the halftime interviews with the selectors?
Yeah.
So Ger O'Keefe was saying that Tyrone always hits you when you least expect it. And this is the boy, and he's going into the Kerry dressing room now. And is like, Tyrone, have Kerry figured out?
Yeah, I wrote down what he said at halftime. He says, Tyrone are playing exceptionally well. Are extremely well. They have Kerry figured out. They're stopping us from getting the ball in fast. They're attacking us around the middle of the field and the half back, and they're pressuring us into the area. Actually, excellent analysis from Ger, because it pretty much tallied with all the notes I had put down there beforehand. And like, I mean, it was a very honest interview from him. It was great stuff from a selector at halftime. To be able to sum it up like that. But that was very obvious from anybody playing that Kerry were playing hopeful balls in and Tyrone played a much better structured game.
Was it Jared McAleer for Tyrone? He towed the line a bit more. He just sort of said, oh look, you know, we have to keep working hard, and he did what you'd expect a selector to do, whereas Ger O'Keefe just came out and
He basically did an analysis that a pundit at halftime would be given. But there was some great matchups. So Kerry went with Aidan O'Mahony in the full back line on Stephen O'Neill. Obviously the strength and the kind of, you know, physical makeup there. Thomas Sullivan was on Canavan, which made sense. He was their go-to man marker. And Mike McCarthy was on Muggsy. So we'd love to send an SOS and find out where Mike McCarthy was for that high ball, or how that kind of switch came apart. On the other side then, Moynihan started on Doer. Mark O'Shea started on McGuigan, but Mark O'Shea then went on Doer when he started affecting the game. Ryan McManaman was on Gooch, and Conor Gormley was on Declan Sullivan. Now that was one thing you'd be wondering about, Gormley on Declan Sullivan and not following him. But then when you saw it off camera a couple of times of Doer getting back on O'Sullivan, that was obviously the plan, right? So Conor, I want you covering the full back line. Doer, you have to pick up Declan O'Sullivan. And sure, Doer was more than happy to do that kind of work.
Yeah, and I think actually it started to look very perilous, like Gormley on Declan O'Sullivan, because O'Sullivan got in a lot of ball. He made things happen. Yeah. But I think that's because he was further up in the forward line, so Gormley had a choice. Do I pick him up or do I drop off? Whereas O'Sullivan then, when Tyrone started getting their groove and getting bodies back and hitting them, he started going deeper for balls, and he was less of a threat, and then it let Gormley just sit in front. And even if O'Sullivan got the ball, then Gormley was still there in front of him.
I think I was looking at Peter Canavan was 34 in that final. Seamus Moynihan was 2 years younger at 32. Yeah, he was 32. Mike Hassett was at 30, and Dara Kinnaird 29. Hassett and Kinnaird looked older than they were. Because I actually was surprised. I was thinking, like, Kerry's experienced players, other than Darragh O'Shea, who played very well throughout the whole game. We'll talk about that in performance of the weekend. Moynihan, Hassett and Dara Kinnaird probably didn't perform on the day at all.
No, well, Kinnaird took his goal well, but outside of that,
was it.
I didn't really feel the weight
of the ball, really.
No, he took a free, I think, and that was the height of it. Like, I don't really remember anything else outside of that. And in a two-man full forward line, you can't really have that. They weren't helped with the ball going in, but yeah, they probably need him more. I didn't realise he's only 29 at that stage.
So only 29, 30 at that stage, yeah. And like, I mean, Liam Hassett was trying to follow Philip Jordan the whole time, and like, he had to be called ashore because Jordan really started influencing the game, I thought, in the second half more than anything else. Sean Cavanagh, you wouldn't think he was playing in the first half, completely anonymous, but came into it well then in the second half, kind of started hanging out under the Cusack stand, you know, and trying to cut in field. Yeah. He had a few shots. I don't think he scored, but one came off the post. But he started getting into the game a little bit more, but he wasn't in it at all in the first half.
No, he came in did so much that I assumed that he might have been given a rollicking at half time, because as you said, he was anonymous in the first half, and Sean Cavanagh at that stage was like the midfielder. And yeah, it was strange that he wasn't dominating. I know he's marking Darragh O'Shea. Maybe he's preoccupied with that, but I think maybe somebody gave him a word that, like, we need you going the other direction and influencing the game.
Yeah, it was a weird one that Tyrone went down the middle with all their kickouts. Bizarre, considering that they didn't have a midfield that could compete with Kerry at all. Kerry won most of the kickouts. Like, I didn't have time to do stats on it now, but they dominated from kickouts, which is an incredible thing, considering they won so much possession, but they kicked so much
just
away.
Just kicked it away. Unbelievable.
Like, when you're watching it, knowing what we know now about not giving away possession too much, you'd just be like, Christ almighty, what are these tactics?
So this is, like, Tomás O'Shea was my favourite player growing up, right? And if, like, I remember watching that, I don't remember thinking, geez, Tomás O'Shea's having a bad game. But watching it now, it's like he was having such a bad game, like, that he would be brought off because he just kept kicking it away. But that was obviously the tactic. So back then he probably wasn't having a bad game, but he just kept getting the ball.
Well, no, Tomás wasn't having a good game. Mellon took him for two early points. He wasn't marking him, and then he kicked a good bit of ball away.
Kicked loads away. Yeah. He got the goal. Like, you know, and that was an amazing run as well before the goal started. Like, you know, when
he played a 1-2, yeah. But there was an element of luck about the goal, how it came back to him. Like, yeah. I mean, there was two efforts. There was an effort that Mike Frank Russell went for a pint, Brosnan went for a goal, and then it just finished up with O'Shea, who just, like, he just lashed at it, you know?
But one of those kicks nowadays, it would be, like, can cause people to be getting onto you for 2 minutes then at half time. What are you doing? You just kicked it out. And maybe that's a bad thing, too, that the game's gotten to that level, but. Yeah, Tomás, like, just a couple times, like, or sorry, five or six times, just launched the ball away.
It's all relative, I suppose. Back then, that wasn't seen. What Tyrone really were doing was changing the game and using the ball an awful lot better and not kicking the ball away. Like, they played keep ball a little bit towards the end of the game, like the Philip Jordan point.
Yeah.
And there was another point just before it where they're just playing the ball across the field waiting for that opening. It looked a little bit similar to what we're seeing now, didn't it? Like, that Tyrone team was ahead of its time.
Yeah, it was interesting you're saying about them going down the middle. Pascal McConnell was giving himself 10 extra yards for the kickouts. Did you see? I put one up on Twitter there. Yeah. After the O'Canada goal, he was at the edge of the D taking the kickout, had the cone set up, put the ball on top of it, and I just lumped it away, and the ref obviously didn't notice.
I don't know how he was getting away with that. Stephen O'Neill scored two beautiful points in the second half. One was after 2 1-2s, I think, with Sean Kavanagh, and it was a great score. And then a lovely dummy solo off the right and a pint off the left. You know, when you're able to get points like that, then the Canavan pint was an absolutely exceptional score. You know, they just had some of those exceptional forwards. Muggsy scored a nice pint over his head.
Lovely.
McGuigan's pints were unbelievable. Yeah. Like, I was talking to him about them. The pint in his very first pint was from an impossible angle.
He dropped the shoulder and
went back the other way. But even his third pint, where Muggsy threw it back out to him, that was at a very important part of the game. Darryl O'Shea, incidentally, had a very easy chance for him to put it level. And that was a huge change. That was deflating for Kerry because they didn't deserve to be level at that stage, and they would have been. And then I think it was Canavan then got that exceptional point after 58 minutes to put them two up.
Yeah, so they would have had the goal. Their big player would have got the point. They would have been level out of nowhere. And they're back in it. Like, there's so many moments like that. Like, I still, this sounds pathetic that I remember this, but Derry playing Tyrone in 2003, so Tyrone won the All-Ireland. They drew the first game, but Derry were four up. Fergal Doherty went straight through and blasted it wide, and we still think of that as the moment that Derry drew that game. You know, if they had a score, they would have pushed on. And this was very similar. Darryl O'Shea coming down, put it over, and Kerry are going to push on.
Well, that was it, because Tyrone had gone 5 ahead, 1-12 to 1-7.
Yeah.
And like, Kerry just looked dead and buried, and the goal was a lifeline that they just didn't deserve. Like, Tyrone were by far the better team, and they weren't, and the Kerry tactics weren't helping them.
No.
Like, if we're being honest, they were not helping them.
Are you surprised they didn't, like, change anything? Like, they didn't try to change the way they were playing.
No.
Like, not once.
And like, Donaghy wasn't there at that stage. It was Gooch and Darrow Canada. Like, whatever about Gooch, who can catch in the air, Darrow Canada can't win those balls.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they were thinking. I don't know how Ger O'Keefe could sum that game up at half time the way he did, and then go out in the second half. Now, to be fair, Paul Galvin gave a lovely little ball to Gooch for a pint. Then for Owen Brosnan was fouled. Darryl O'Shea gave a lovely little ball to Gooch, who offloaded it to Brosnan, and he was fouled. Why were they consistently given? This was a game plan that went completely wrong.
Yeah, and what's the common theme of all those good passes to play? It's a lovely little ball to Gooch.
Yeah.
You know, who's terrorising Tyrone, and you can't mark it when you give him a good ball.
Yeah.
He's the best player in Ireland. You give him a good ball, what do? And yeah, like, but it was chronic as well. So not only were they hitting it from too long, but it got to the stage then where they might have been 45 yards out and they could have pushed on in, and he just lumped it in. The player just stopped like it was a training drill.
Yeah.
Just kicked it in. There was one stage, might have been Tomás again, who just kicked it diagonally.
Was it diagonal? It wasn't the worst ball, that. It went over the end line.
No, I mean the one that landed around 35 yards out on top of somebody's head. And I was like, what was that even planning? Like, you know, there was not, like, at least the other ones were dropping into the edge of the square. This one was just 45 yards out. It's just like they'd given up and just kicked the ball.
Yeah. And Jack O'Connor wasn't interviewed. It was actually Ger O'Keefe was interviewed after the game as well. So, like, I mean, unless Jack O'Connor got the tactics completely wrong, something we'll have to find out from the Kerry side. But, like, I mean, there's no doubt that like when I was actually out of the country for that game, I remember watching it then again when I got home, but it's been so long since I'd watched it. Like, I remember thinking, you know, that those two teams at that time were at their, you know, at their very peak. Like, yeah. I loved that Kerry team, but I loved that Tyrone team as well. Like, not loved them as in the way I would love teams now, because I was actually playing against them. But yeah. I knew they were both brilliant. I knew they were as good as what was out there. And Armagh too. I suppose for Tyrone to have beaten Dublin, Armagh, and then Kerry. And that's after drawing in the Ulster final as well.
And semi-final.
And losing to Armagh and drawing in the semi-final. Who did it draw with? Cavan, was
Cavan,
it?
Cavan, yeah.
Like, I mean, it's just unbelievable. 10 games to win that All-Ireland the year after Cormac McInallen died. Like, I mean, incredible stuff.
Yeah, and to do it against that Kerry team. Sorry, when you watched it back, what did you think? Did you think that Kerry had missed the boat? Or?
No, well, I don't remember at the time. I remember thinking maybe Tyrone were a bit or defensive or something. I don't know, in my head.
Yeah.
I think the narrative back then, and it's what Mickey Hart said after the game, some people think the football, at that time we probably hadn't seen teams swarm midfield and have a lot of bodies in there, you know, and it was forcing maybe Kerry into kicking it because they were under pressure.
Yeah.
Maybe we hadn't seen that before, and I'm looking at that now thinking that Tyrone just had the best balance between a lovely attacking, running, kicking game, and for me that was beautiful to watch. But I think back then I might have been thinking, geez, they're taking it a bit too far now. It's all relative, yeah, you see. No. We've come from 2011 onwards where we just think that's a breath of fresh air.
Yeah,
at
true.
The time I can probably understand the narrative around it a bit more.
Whereas if you told somebody in 2005 that in 15 years time this is going to be a breath of fresh air, I think you're nuts. But you're right, and I think maybe a lot of it as well, like, is some of the flashpoints where, you know, you saw Cooper going down and McMenamin walking away. And I remember at the time, like, it's just, there was a rabid Derry fan back then, and, like, you know, used to hate that Tyrone team, even though now I look back and be like, Jesus, what a great bunch of fellas and a lovely team. Like, but yeah, it just looked hateful, like, you know, Doher coming in late and people, and it looked like he was leaving a stud in there as well, and even Brian McGuigan coming running in and getting a belt
and going down. They were fond of going down. Joe McMahon went down holding his face, but I think his actual ankle was stepped on, and Doher's ankle was stepped on accidentally by Seamus Moynihan in the first half, right, as well. So, like, I mean, sometimes they went down holding their faces, but it might have actually been hurt somewhere else. I don't know, but yeah, no, there's no doubt they were an absolutely unbelievable team. I liked the way Canavan started the game, and he was floating around the half forward line. Mm. Then when it settled down a little bit, it was very obvious that Muggsy and Stephen O'Neill were the furthest in, and then Canavan was out in front of them, and then Canavan switched with O'Neill, and it was Muggsy and Canavan, which it was in 03,
yep,
for the year. And then O'Neill was out in front of them. And I've seen O'Neill playing better. He scored an unbelievable free off the outside of his left foot in the first half, and then got the two from play in the second half. But that worked really well. Like, I mean, that full forward line, you know? And it was only Canavan and O'Neill. Mulligan was always inside, obviously, because he's not going to, yeah, be buzzing around in front. But, like, I mean, I don't know, when you have that kind of a lineup, and then, you know, McGuigan trying to hold the 40, and Mallon and Doer going back helping out with the midfielders, for me, just perfection.
Yeah, really, and good ball players those two as well. Like, you know, McGuigan, I actually surprised when I watched it back, the amount of work that McGuigan went through as well. In my head, he was always just a classy centre forward, like one of the best ever. But the amount of dog work he did was incredible. And, like, that front six is just, it is, you said, perfection. Like, will you get a better blend than that? Well, Dublin probably would every 4 years, but I'm sure,
yeah,
we'll talk about it.
It's interesting, we know obviously now, like, I mean, every All-Ireland winner, you think they're going to win the next one. And it was Kerry that ended up winning the next two.
Mm.
And a lot of those Tyrone players finished up. Well, Holmes would have finished up. Chris Lawn, who came up, finished up. Canavan finished up. Stephen O'Neill finished up and then ended up coming back for the final in 08. Brian McGuigan, he just suffered a horrific leg break the year after. Then a horrible eye injury. And by the time 08 came, he didn't actually start the final in 08. He didn't start the final in a way at all. I think Penrose started ahead of him. So there was, you know, it's it's a weird one the way that works out.
Stephen O'Neill got drafted back in as well.
He got drafted back in, yeah, for the final. Muggsy didn't start in 08. He was gone for that stage as well.
Like 3 years later.
3 years, only 3 years later after Kerry winning the next two and then to stop Kerry again in 08, which is just unbelievable. Mm. But right, we'll come back with performance of the weekend.
Doherty, who's a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with them, yeah.
Okay, so performance of the weekend. First one on the list is Brian McGuigan. We've covered most of this with McGuigan. It's actually funny enough when you hear Brian talking in the interview, and his memory is sketchy enough. The pint he got just before halftime was at the top of the D, and he said it was 45 metres out. So, like, I mean, the only reason I wasn't going to pull him up, but I just watched this morning.
Yeah.
He's got lovely memories, you know, of being maybe a little bit further out, but I thought that was funny. Yeah, that was a lovely pint off the top of that top of the D, and the first pint and the third pint. And just when you watch the game and you see how much ball he was on. Mm. He was on an incredible amount of ball. And like he said, after the suspect start he had where he was dispossessed early when he was through on goals and then kicked a wide, which he should have squared across.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be under pressure there, wouldn't you? You know, after in an All-Ireland final, there's two big mistakes early, and then he takes on that shot off that acute angle.
Yeah.
There's big risk there now. You've missed that there, and you're starting to watch the sideline. Maybe not Brian McGuigan, but
that's it. Like, it was an interesting after he missed the goal chance. Didn't seem to care. Like, it was just like, he's going to get another chance, or he didn't think about it. And remember, you had Johnny Cooper on, and he was talking about keeping your comms right, you know, your body language and stuff like that. But I don't think Brian McGuigan was thinking that way. I think he was just thinking, I'm going to get another ball in a minute's time, and I'll do something with that. And
yeah,
like that is fascinating. Like, you know, that would be eating at me. He's talking about scoring an amazing point down later on. I'd be thinking about that miss.
I always found it very hard to shake off a miss. Mm. Like, and they say the psychology behind it is that you're not supposed to show that you're annoyed, and I'd be like, Wally, you idiot,
fuck off, Wally.
Oh, I'd be so fuming with myself, you know. And like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because all the personalities are different. Like, I mean, if I get frustrated with myself, that's just always the way I've ever done it, you know. I think for me to not do that would probably knock me off a little bit more than, you know.
Do you know, the only thing I'd say about that is, like, when it's a bad player, not you, when it's a bad player who's saying, oh, for God's sake, Conan, it's like, come on, you're not that good. Like, you normally miss anyway. Right, like, right. You know, so I think some boys are doing it to try and show that, like, normally I'd score that, but, you know, but if you're all right, you can do it.
Right, okay, I take your point. Owen Mulligan. Oh, Brian McGuigan was telling, how did Brian McGuigan not get man of the match in that, and giving away my performance of the weekend? Can it be performance of the weekend from 15 years ago?
Performance of the 15 years ago.
Owen Mulligan, apparently, according to Brian, got man of the match that night. Actually, it was difficult to pick a man of the match. Well, Brian McGuigan for me was the standout. Probably Mulligan was up there, would have been in your top three. He scored two from play and three frees, and some difficult frees in fairness to Muggsy, and got an early score, which was important as well, and set up the goal, which was a massive play in the whole game as well. And, you know, was out around the field getting through a little bit of work too.
Yeah, I suppose it was just, he had that iconic moment, like, where it felt like he was in the sky for ages, and perfect hands. And what he did really well when he came down was that he waited, he took the tackle, he pushed in a little bit, and then he popped it off at the perfect time.
Yeah. So he didn't give it to him too early, no.
Yeah, so I suppose that night, that was probably still in people's minds, like that sight of Canavan, like, give me, like, you know, and Mulligan just waiting for him to get into position. So yeah, I can see, like, I wouldn't begrudge him the award.
No, definitely not. Ryan Mellon, I keep calling him Mellon.
Ryan Mellon, no, you're right with Mellon, you'd said Mellon earlier.
Right, Ryan Mellon. He had a brilliant start to the game, scored two brilliant points, which was important. And that was at a time where Kerry were looking like they were flying it. So like they were really important. And then he got a brilliant fetch in the second half, which was really important as well. And was just all over the field and in the game really well.
Yeah, and all this trying to sort of keep an eye on Tomasso Shea's raids as well down the wing. So yeah. He was like, I don't know, like calling players underrated, especially when they're on one of the greatest teams of all time. But because of the forward line, he doesn't get mentioned as often. You never start a podcast with Ryan Mellon to talk about it, but he was a real fine bit of stuff, like, you know, quality player and work like a real dog.
Yeah, Doer obviously is a machine, there's no doubt about that. An absolutely incredible score that he got, and I was always amazed by Doer, thinking, because I was moved to wing forward in around that time, and I was always thinking, how is he always free all over the field? Yeah. How is he on so much ball? How can I get like that? And then I kind of figured out, watched him someday, and I've often gone to Croke Park when I'm trying to figure out maybe a new position, and I'll just do player cam on him. And then I was realised he's free all the time because he works like a dog. That's why he's free, because he runs back and marks Declan O'Sullivan and tackles him and doubles up on players and just does so much work that his man can hardly be tackling him while he's tackling somebody else. Yeah. So he's constantly free and constantly popping up everywhere because of the savage work he does. And then I said to myself, do I really want to do all that savage work? And I was like, nah, probably not. So now I need to figure out another way of, I need to figure out another wing forward to watch yeah. and try and emulate or try and take parts of their game. But anyways, I looked at the Brian Doer model. Yeah. And it wasn't for me, even though like, I mean, the engine he had was just, it's just phenomenal. And that wasn't his best All-Ireland final at all. In a way, he was even better.
Like, it is like there's elements of superhuman in him, like, because you're right, he does all that work back, he tackles, he runs after somebody else, and then when they turn it over, like I know myself, like, you're sort of looking for a breakdown, like let the wing backs get back up the pitch, but then he's the one carrying it back up or going in support, and never seemed to tire. And he's one of those boys, and I don't know if it's true or not, but who were said to have finished the bleep test, you know, every so often you hear.
Oh, well, I'd believe it with him, yeah.
Like, yeah, because he just had the same pace all the time, and like, it didn't matter how much work he was doing, he was just going back up the pitch again and had energy to, many times do you see him like coming down the wing and kicking it over 45 metres when he should be dead on his feet.
Yeah, no, exactly, he was outstanding. Like I said, Philip Jordan deserves a mention for his second half performance. Colin Cooper definitely deserves a mention for Kerry. He got 3 from play, he set up the goal, he set up Brosnan for that run at the end. Any decent ball he got, he did. Like, I'd say Gooch was tearing his hair out in that. You know, when you're on form, you know, give me a good ball. I'm playing well here.
Yeah.
Like, this is not a final that I'm not, that things aren't going well for me. If you give me a decent ball, you know, I'll play well. And then you look at it as well and you say he's definitely in the mix for performance of the weekend. And then you say Ryan McManaman did brilliantly on him, because Kerry fecked up Gooch, because any of those old shitty, terrible balls, Ricey's getting in a punch, and whatever way it always fell down, Ricey's on the ground winning. You know what I mean? Yeah. And he's bursting out with it, or it's gone one way and Gooch has gone the other, and Ricey's there, and he's, you know, so you'd say Ricey had an excellent game on Gooch, but you'd say Gooch had an excellent game, which is unusual. Gooch lived off scraps. He scored 3 points, set up a goal off maybe about six decent balls.
It's like it's not really like, so in the final there past Michael Fitzsimons on Clifford, and they both had class games even though they're marking each other. Clifford scored 4 points, but Fitzsimons was firefighting somewhere else, whereas this time the two players had good games, but it was because Kerry were just feeding. Kerry were trying to use Cooper so much, but somehow they underused him.
Yeah.
Like, because they were playing him useless balls that McManaman could just cut out. And like, I don't think Cooper was dispossessed, was he, in the game?
No. Gooch played well off complete and utter scraps.
Yeah. So whatever he had, he worked with.
What made Ricey look good was the terrible, terrible ball that consistently for a full game came in.
Yeah.
As in, we're looking at a ball landing in a 2-man full forward line high, and 2 men are jumping for it, it's falling down, and Tyrone winning the breaks.
Yeah.
And that's what Gooch, and something that's a little bit frustrating about Gooch is that you never saw him giving out too much. Did he give out a little bit to Dara O'Shea
one time?
Yeah. But like, I'd be tearing my head out here. I'd say that, then again, wait, we're talking too much. This had to be a Kerry tactic. This, they had to agree as a team that this was it, or else Gooch would have been losing his mind.
Yeah, like, in the one time he gave out to him, he was just sort of standing with his hands out. you know, as if keep it in play. But that, like, it was only because that ball went out of play. I don't think he cared about the other one, so it probably was a tactic. But I was trying to sort of make the David Clifford comparison, and Cooper was coming into an unbelievable team, so maybe did he feel that he had earned his place yet to start giving out, whereas Clifford's coming into a team who badly need him. You know, whereas he can demand a bit more. He's yeah. captain, obviously, now.
But yeah, but that coach was around three. This was his third year.
Yeah.
Two, three, four. This was his fourth year. So, like,
was
I mean,
he in two? Yeah, I thought he was in two.
He was two. Sure, he was destroying poor Francie Bellew in the first
half. That's right.
Take off Francie, and then it all turned around in the second half. That was his debut year in 2002. Owen Brosnan, I thought, played well. One of the better Kerry performers. Darrell Shea kind of dominated the midfield area, scored two unbelievably good points. The one blot on Dara, the two blots, is a couple of terrible long balls, like we just mentioned, and that bloody point to draw it. The easiest, the right footed point he scored was from a tight angle on the run, a lovely one off his left. And this one was bread and butter for him, and it should have gone over the bar, and that would have put a draw match. And now the Kerry crowd would have got into it, and it could have put it out. It's always getting back level is that psychological kind of thing. But I thought in general he was one of the better of Kerry players. Difficult, I suppose, trying to find the top players on the Kerry side of it. Outside of Gooch, who did everything he could, you know, you'd find fault with a lot of the other Kerry players.
Yeah, and like, I suppose it comes back to Jack O'Connor a little bit as well. Like, you know, we were looking at it and Darren O'Sullivan had come on, and Chris Long was on at the stage, and you're thinking, well, there's a mismatch. And O'Sullivan had one run and he got fouled and Kerry got a free and he might have scored, but that was it. Like, because they were just raining ball in on top, it didn't matter that Darren O'Sullivan was there in the edge of the square either. So even when it was O'Sullivan and Cooper against Law and McMenamin, they didn't try to exploit that either. They just kept playing the same ball in.
Although Sullivan did made a few good runs under the Cusack stand side, you know, he looked like he was he could have done a bit of damage. Okay, performance of the weekend has to go to Brian McGuigan. Outrageous he didn't get man of the match at the time, and outrageous that he didn't get an All-Star.
Peter Canavan
got that All-Star at centre half forward.
His last year, to give him the...
Outrageous. Like, it's just simply outrageous that he didn't get an All-Star that year, and that Canavan, let's be honest, got it for two matches.
Now, the only thing is... No, actually, McGuigan came back for the Cavan match.
Oh, he was back early doors.
Yeah, he came on in the
Cavan game.
And
they
were in big trouble until he came on, I remember that.
Yeah, and sure, they played 10 feckin' games. Yeah. Not like he wasn't around.
He missed one. Canavan scored 1-7 in the replay, and I was sort of looking through, like, you know... Canavan, he scored the winner against Armagh, scored that goal, but he was behind O'Neill, Mulligan and McGuigan at that stage in terms of a scoring threat.
You would have imagined,
that's harsh on McGuigan.
Anyways, well, listen, 15 years later you get performance at the weekend, Brian, so congratulations for that. Right, that's it. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll look at another All-Ireland. Talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, will get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their houses for 10 years.